Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. Last week on Black Brick. Their conversation had been innocuous enough that it could have been about anything, but with the Week Leak reference, my mind jumped to Jason Kurt. If Beltran was correct about the relationship between Vargo and Kurt by using Andrews as an intermediary, then Vargo had known Kurt was a weak link. He probably expected Kurt to steal from them as he siphoned money over to Payne. Was that the job that Vargo had been referring to? Could the mess be the explosion at the Kurt home? Had Vargo been working late because he had been coordinating the attack? I looked at Shannon and could tell that she was jumping to the same conclusions. All small talk between us ceased as we spent the rest of the evening listening to every word they said, even though they never returned to the topic. Once they finished their meal, we followed them as Vargo had his driver drop Janessa off before taking him home. After that, the surveillance team told us we could go home because Vargo's place was too secure and there was nothing more we could do. On the drive back to Black Brick, I promised myself that if I ever learned for a fact that Vargo had been behind the deaths of Jason Kurt and his sister, I would make sure that Vargo did not get away with it. 8. The city passed by as I looked out the train window and tried to relax. The morning news coming out of San Diego said the explosion at the Kurt home was a gas leak, but I knew better. 4 people had died. In addition to Jason and his sister, their parents had been home as well. Vargo would have a lot to answer for once I could prove he was behind it. I yawned and tried to clear my mind. The train was slowing down, and I could make out the stop ahead when I leaned in closer to the glass. It had been a low-key day, but I was afraid that would not last for long. The morning had been spent in a biology class. After that, Shannon and I had met up with Cherry and Tom, and we had begun to make plans to apprehend Lauren Griffith. It turned out that Beltran had already known of her connection to Janessa and wanted to exploit the division in her loyalty. I had been a little surprised when we'd followed Lauren onto the train. When she and her bodyguard had taken the seats at the back, Shannon and I had opted for seats just behind the doors at the center of the train car. Cherry and Tom were several rows behind us. We believed that Griffith sometimes acted as a courier for Vargo by moving information and items that were too sensitive to be trusted to the normal ways of communication and transportation. At some point in the day, she was going to make a pickup. After that, we were supposed to bring her into Black Brick. I was surprised at the boldness of our orders, but could not help but wonder if Beltran had leverage on her or Janessa. We did not bring somebody in unless we had evidence that they were involved in something serious. As far as I knew, we did not have anything like that on either of them. It made me curious about what Griffith was picking up. If the pickup was supposed to happen on the train, we would not notice them from our vantage point. But we did not have any other option. "If it looks like she's heading back to work after this," I said, "we will have to move in." Shannon rolled her eyes, but did not respond. I suppose that it was an obvious next move, but I'd wanted to make sure that we were both on the same page. Given her response, I decided to not say anything to Cherry and Tom. "Let's take a break," Shannon said, leaning in and setting her hand on my leg. "We get so little time together, as it is." Today she was wearing a green coat with a white blouse and black pants. We did not know where Lauren would take us, so I was stuck in a suit. Shannon had pulled her hair back. When we had attended class earlier, she'd been wearing high heels that matched her coat, but switched them for a pair of running shoes. She had learned that lesson the hard way. Whenever she went out wearing heels, it was a good bet that she was carrying a better pair of shoes in her purse in case she needed them. I did not respond. Her lips barely touched my ear and sent a chill down my spine. Her smile reminded me of a stolen moment we had last night in the car before returning to Black Brick. I lived for the moments we were able to share, though they were few. Beltran might blow a gasket if he found out about us, but he did not seem bothered by Martinez and Cherry. What did he expect? After learning to depend on one another under extreme circumstances, could he really be surprised when his agents became involved? I was not worried. The risk was worth it in my estimation. I just didn't want Cherry and Tom to learn about our relationship. Come now, Shannon said, looking bothered that I was ignoring her. I resisted the urge to look over my shoulder at the others and hoped they had not heard. I half expected a kiss when she leaned in again, but she kept that boundary, for now. She always seemed to get flirtier when there was a chance that somebody from Blackbrick might catch us. I think she got a thrill from it. It just made me uncomfortable. Even though I thought our relationship was worth the risk, I did not feel a need to increase our odds of getting caught. Don't flatter yourself, I whispered, checking my watch as I threw her a smile to make sure she knew I was teasing. We still had a few minutes before the next stop. For good luck? She asked. When I did not lean in, she looked disappointed. We had both agreed to keep it quiet. She chuckled. I gave in and checked on the others. Cherry was absorbed in a magazine. It was surprising that an editor thought the woman on the cover was attractive enough to sell copies. Perhaps she was the daughter of somebody famous. Tom was beside her and playing a game on his cell phone. Neither of them were looking our way. You don't think this is the test, do you? Shannon asked in a more normal voice. No, I said. It isn't dangerous or complicated enough. If the rumors were true, you either ended up dead or ready to quit. I did not see that happening today. I overheard Martinez and Scott Henry talking about their final test and did not get the impression that they had known about it beforehand or that it had been easy. Martinez had stopped mid-sentence when he noticed me. I did not bother to ask for more information because Martinez would not give it. I was glad Martinez was not on assignment with us today. I needed to find a way to get him booted from our organization. Ready to quit or dead? Shannon frowned. I don't like the sound of that. I shrugged and pulled out my phone to reread the email from Beltran about today's assignment, looking for anything I might have missed. At the top was a color photograph of Griffith. We're flying blind, I said. This feels rushed. For an operation like this, we should have spent the last weeks keeping close tabs on Griffith. A month would have been better. The email we'd received from Beltran this morning was short and lacked information, and the briefing with Beltran a few hours ago had been quick as well. He had been in a hurry and did not have time for questions before leaving the room. That's why it could be our final test, Shannon said. Beltran is testing how we handle pressure and uncertainty. I shook my head. Unlikely, the final test will be more challenging than what we're facing today. Suppressing the butterflies in my stomach, I began a silent meditation. When we'd first come to Blackbrick, many of our missions had been fakes. They'd been set up to look like the real thing, but had been fashioned to be a learning experience. As time continued, some of the operations turned out to be real, where lives were at stake. Eventually, the fake missions had been phased out. When I realized that I was fiddling with one of the .40-caliber subcompact Glocks that rested in the pocket of my coat, I stopped. Small enough to hide in my pocket, but carrying a large enough round to rip a hole the size of a volleyball into a man's chest. I'd have preferred my compact, but that was not as easily hid. Subcompacts took more skill and concentration because the smaller pistol had enough recoil to jump out of your hands if you were not careful. The train slowed to a stop, and I kept an eye on the exit to make sure Lauren did not get off the train. I examined the people that boarded, wondering if one of them would make the drop. Several old women, a mother with a young son, and a couple of men and women in business attire, and a man wearing a jogging suit were among those who got on. None of them looked like a fit, and most of them sat forward of us. As they sat, I noticed a man in a baseball cap up front, who had been reading a paper, and looked back at the new passengers. I caught a partial glimpse of his face and made a connection. Pain is here, I said. What? Shannon asked. Where? The man in the ball cap near the front. Shannon groaned. I think you're right. Biting off a curse, I used the front-facing camera of my phone to keep an eye on what was happening behind us. Nothing out of the ordinary yet. I fired off a text to Cherry and Tom, letting them know about Payne. Griffith looked bored, but her guard was alert and paying attention. As the train started to move again, Payne stood up at the front of the car, brandishing a pistol with a 30-round magazine extended out of the bottom. My training kicked in, and before I realized what I was doing, I had my hand on my pistol and was about to draw when five other armed men stood. Two were right beside Payne at the front. The other three were several rows in front of us. I lowered my hand. The men were wound up enough that none of them had noticed me. Nobody has to die, but I might kill a few just to keep the rest of you quiet. Payne pushed his sunglasses up the tip of his nose and pointed his pistol at the back of the train. He smiled. That chin was unmistakable. I felt like an idiot for missing his team of men. Everything we knew about Payne said that he liked to work alone. So instead of trying to assess whether he had a team with him or not, I had just assumed that we had one problem, not six. Shannon swore softly. Payne's three closest men moved to the rear of the car. I chanced a look back. Griffith's guard had not moved, and he eyed the gunman as he approached. When I saw Payne take a step forward and look down at a man, I hesitated, unsure what to do next. "What's this?" Payne asked. I couldn't tell what the man was doing to provoke Payne, but it looked like he had his phone out. Payne shot him before I could react. The gunfire in the enclosed space sounded like a bomb. A child near the front started crying. The mother put her arms around him in a comforting and protecting fashion. "No phones," Payne said. I gripped one of the pistols in my pocket while folding my other hand over the top. I did not see a way to intervene without getting shot, but holding my pistol grip helped me remain calm. Payne motioned to Griffith. "Come here." Everybody's eyes focused on Griffith as she stood and stepped into the aisle. I felt bad for her. Griffith's bodyguard looked furious, and I wondered if he would do something stupid. The man had to know there wasn't anything that he could do with six armed gunmen staring his way. The child started wailing again as the gunman nearest Griffith grabbed her and pulled her forward. They were right in front of me when Payne spoke. "I'll throw that child off the train if he doesn't shut up." His voice was matter-of-fact and calm, leaving no doubt that he would. Our briefing on Payne had said that he could be cold, but I was taken aback by the threat and tightened my grip on my pistol. The mother clasped the head of her boy close, whispering into his ear. The boy had quieted by the time the train started slowing for the next stop. "We're getting off. Everybody else stays here." Payne pulled a bag out from under his seat. "If we are not followed, there is a 50% chance of this blowing up. If we are, it becomes 100%. He was interrupted by a gunshot. The man that had latched onto Griffith fell, blood spilling out of his chest. For a moment, I wondered if Tom had done something stupid, but it was Griffith's guard that had fired the shot. He had stood, pistol in hand. Foolish idiot, he was going to get other people killed. Reaching across Shannon, I pulled Griffith into our row as her guard dove behind a seat. There was a brief silence before the cacophony of gunfire filled the train. It stopped several minutes later once the guard was dead. During that time, Shannon and I kept our heads down, and I expected that Cherry and Tom were doing the same. We knew a no-win situation when we saw one. That didn't mean I liked it. It also did not mean that the guilt I'd feel about how this day had gone down would ever go away. It took me several heartbeats to realize that the gunfire had stopped. The sound was still echoing in my head. The small confines of the train car made the gunshot seem 5 times as loud. The people in the rows around me started lifting their heads up, fear at war with curiosity. The guard's body lay halfway into the aisle, and it looked like he had been shot more than 10 times. Payne still stood where he had been when the firefight had started. If anything, his face registered annoyance at the interruption. "There's now a 75% chance the bomb goes off," Payne said. "Any more heroes?" Nobody moved. One of the gunmen pulled Griffith out of our aisle as the train came to a stop. When the doors opened, he pushed her out and followed after her. The others were not far behind. Payne placed the bag on the floor and stepped over it. As he walked to the door, it looked like he was not concerned about being the last of his men on the train. In fact, if I had to guess, his mind was now on to other things. We were beneath his notice. He had said his piece and was now making other plans. Once he left the train, I ran up to Payne's bag. The people around me were shying away. I noticed the woman with the child had pressed her son against the wall. "We have no time," Shannon called after me, but I did not stop until I had the bag in hand. When I turned around, she was waiting at the door for me, her hand on the door trying to keep it open. As I ran towards her, I saw we were not going to make it. The door was not stopping for her hand. "Get off the train," I yelled, but she did not budge. I swore and yelled again, but it did little good. The door was already almost closed. I considered trying to toss the bomb to her so she could chuck it off the train, but thought better of it. I doubted that Payne would have taken any precautions with it. The door was closed and the train was moving again when I reached it. Tom and Cherry were on the other side, chasing after Payne. In my hurry to get to the bag, I had not noticed them getting off the train. Shannon and I tried to pry the door open, but it would not budge. Shannon gave me a look that did not need an explanation. She was pissed at me for going after the bag. I was surprised she was still here. She had had ample opportunity to get off. "I had to make sure somebody kept you from getting killed," Shannon said when I pointed that out, "because you sure aren't doing the job. You're supposed to run away from the bombs, not towards them." I did not respond as I examined the bag and wondered how long we had. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.